Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Begging this question for the listeners is like, what were the circumstances of this 2016 waking up thing? Like you keep referring to it as this moment of grounding. What were those circumstances?
Yeah, well, I want to also be clear. I'll tell you the circumstances, but this will immediately make people, a lot of people go, oh, well, come on. But I want to be clear that when I'm talking about 2016, I'm not like remembering a thing that I'm like, I get, because there were psilocybin mushrooms were involved in a shamanic ceremony, and when you hear people hear
magic
that
mushrooms.
When people hear that, it's easy to be like, oh, you saw something while you were high on drugs.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the show. Michael Gunga and Evan Wickham join me today to explore what exactly happened to Gunga. Going to be an interesting one. And it's been an interesting week in the UK. A new Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, the fifth, I think, in 6 years. Well, at least Unbelievable is here year in, year out. In fact, the end of October marks our 17th year since we started on air on Premier Christian Radio, believe it or not. But now, listen to all over the world. There's a podcast, watched on YouTube, and of course, lots of other ways in which you can interact with us via Premier Unbelievable. We're more than just an apologetics discussion show. We have all kinds of podcasts. I'll be letting you know about some of the stuff we've been broadcasting recently. We've got loads of articles and resources, training as well, available from our website. That's premierunbelievable.com. And I do want to make sure you've marked your calendar for Tuesday, the 15th of November, to join me discussing culture war questions with Sean McDowell. This is a live event. Sean's a brilliant apologist and speaker. His most recent book, A Rebel's Manifesto, is aimed at those who want to act with grace and speak with truth into polarizing issues around LGBT, pornography, abortion, morality, and much more. So it's going to be a great chance to catch up with both of us, ask your questions. Do join us online from anywhere in the world on Tuesday, the 15th of November at 8 p.m. UK. That's 3 p.m. Eastern or 12 noon Pacific if you're in the US or Canada. Register now at unbelievable.live. Free to attend, but registration essential. That's unbelievable.live. And the link is with today's show info. Well, today we're talking about millennials, music, and deconstruction. Michael Gunga and Evan Wickham join me. Michael Gunga is a well-known musician and songwriter who, along with his wife Lisa, were pioneers, really, in the Christian music scene. However, as his theology changed into a more progressive direction, so did his music. And for many years, the podcast that he co-hosts, The Liturgist, has seen listeners go with him on a journey of questioning and deconstructing the Christianity he started with into something very different today. Well, Evan Wickham is a pastor at Park Hill Church in San Diego. He's also a musician and worship leader by background and has collaborated with Michael in the past. And they've remained friends, though they haven't chatted for a little while. So this will be a fun get together to talk about their different journeys up to now. Like Michael, Evan, and many of those he pastors, they're millennials with questions about the Bible, faith, and God. But ultimately, Evan's come to different conclusions to Michael, remaining in the stream, you could say, of historic Orthodox Christianity, despite the trend towards deconstruction among many of his peers. So today we're hearing both their stories, why their journeys have taken them in different directions, and what they see happening among their friends and contemporaries, both in the evangelical and post-Christian world. So welcome along to the show, Evan and Michael.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you both on. been really looking forward to having both of you on. Michael, I've been following your music and the liturgist for a long time, so I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. I know there's a lot of listeners who also listen to the podcast you're involved in. Do you mind taking us back, though, for those who maybe aren't familiar with your story, just to give us a brief sketch of how you came to faith, what that looked like, how you fell into Christian music, and what those early days in that scene were like?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Justin. It's so good to be here. Well, my father was born. I'm just kidding.
So good.
My dad was a pastor, and is a kind of a pastor. He's like a bishop now. So I grew up in church. I grew up learning music in church, and so my spirituality and my music were always tied together. And to just get to the point, I started asking questions probably in late high school, and that continued sort of secretly until I was 30 years old. Like, I would have we'd have late night bus conversations on tour about, like, what's real, what's true, is any of this real? Safe people, it was scary to have those conversations. Yeah. Then, before podcasts and I would sometimes get on chat rooms or something online, but most of that, when I used to do that, it was more like I was trying to defend my faith more than argue from the other side. And some of those conversations ended up, some of the things I would hear in those arguments and debates, which I've always loved a good wrestle. I loved a good debate, and Evan's a good friend for that sometimes too. But some of those things I didn't know how to answer, and things that I would hear in school and papers I would write trying to defend my creationist perspective or whatever it was at the time. And over time, it just sort of gradually, the things that I was really confident in, I became less and less confident in. And it all culminated sort of in, well, there's a couple like big moments. 2010, I was almost ready to let it all go. I was just like, I was ready to let it go. It was more like I didn't know how to hang on anymore. And that was where a lot of our early Gunger music came from, sort of this, like, I don't know what's true anymore. I have all this doubt, and I was suffering and miserable. And that's probably about the time, Evan, you were hanging out with me, right?
I think that was the year.
Was it?
2010, yeah.
It was at the end of that year that I went to Assisi, Italy, had like this incredible spiritual sort of literal mountaintop experience in Assisi, Italy, on this meditation retreat, where I just felt union with God in a way that was like all my questions just sort of disappeared. And it just kind of felt like God is what is, and I don't have to do anything about it. I don't have to believe anything about it. It's just the reality in which I live and move and have my being. And then that was such a beautiful high. I was literally dancing on the mountains of Assisi, like where Francis used to be up there preaching to the squirrels or whatever. And then I spent the next 6 years after that sort of like seeking that experience again, because it was so profound. And I was like completely at peace for the first time kind of ever, in a way that was like completely at peace. And then a lot of seeking, a lot of journeying, studying different religions, practicing different aspects. And then in 2016, I had another sort of like spiritual awakening moment. And that one kind of lasted in a different way than the 2010 one did. And so since then, I don't necessarily identify as any one particular tradition, or I'm not trying to like make my spirituality my identity in that way, but I appreciate and love the Christian tradition as well as a lot of other traditions. So I use spiritual practice at this point to remain grounded, to be in my body, to move into that which I think Jesus was inviting us into, the eternal life of the present moment. And so that's my That's the nutshell.
That's obviously the very much a nutshell, you know, one. And you can listen to many seasons of The Liturgist to get a deeper dive, and your own podcast as well. Michael, you've also got the book out as well. That came out in, was it 2019, 2018?
One of those. I'm not sure. This, Becoming Free, it's called.
Becoming Free. So we'll delve into more of the story as we go. And I'm fascinated to ask you all kinds of questions like, you know, how would you wear the label of Christian? What does God mean to you, that phrase, anymore? And all those kinds of things, which I'm sure you've been asked a million times by many of your listeners as well. But let's introduce Evan as well to the show. Evan, you've been listening to Unbelievable for quite a long time. But we got to meet for the first time just this last summer out in California when we got to share pancakes and all kinds of nice things in California. But tell us a bit about your journey then, and how it began for you, the music side, I guess, and where you were on the journey when you connected with Michael.
Yeah, Michael, thanks for just your story. And so, I mean, my mind is hyperlinking because I read at least the first half of your memoir. Is it a memoir? Would you call it that?
Yeah, kind of like a spiritual memoir. Sort of.
Yeah, and so my mind is like hyperlinking and unfolding more of your story as you speak. It's just I just have so much resonance and mirroring almost of your story. Same, I think we even got married to our wives the same year, like 2000, and then mega church worship leading. And I remember, I grew up, I see the way I see the Bible then as kind of like the beginning and the end of the Bible were like this very specific interpretation that I was handed, where basically young earth creation, like believe it or you're unfaithful. And then the end of the Bible, like eschatology, believe that we're white knuckling it till the rapture. This whole thing ends one way with the world blowing up by God's like finger on the button. And those two kind of, those are both very hyperbolic, but the point is like I was handed kind of this bookended Bible. And it made me wonder in my 20s, like, is the middle then like even true? And where Michael, you know, I resonate with that, wanting to kind of process and have a safe place to ask the questions that are most meaningful to you. And you did it secretly. Mine was like half secret and very much public as well. I remember, you know, taking it to evangelical Facebook and
a very friendly place usually, right?
Yeah, and kicking up some dust as I'm kind of just unpacking the beautiful thing that is orthodoxy, the beautiful thing that is the historic church responding to God's revelation in Christ, and like the very core of what that is. I'm like, I want to get to that, because if it's there, I want it. If it's not, I don't want any of it. And kind of peeling back the layers. Every one of us are handed a version. Every Christian is handed a version of Christianity. And so getting past the secondary issues to the primary was kind of the task of my 20s. And where it seems like maybe, Michael, you had a secretive a relationship with that process. I had a very more public one. Yeah, it created kind of a community within the church around me of like questioning. And I realized my wife and I felt a call to the church, to plant a church, to lead a community within the church, while we're leading worship and things. But I knew at that time I couldn't lead a church in reaction to the bad stuff and the hurt and the bad teaching I had encountered. I had to lead a church in response to the goodness of God and the core of the gospel that has united the church across continents and millennia. So part of that involved physically moving, like physically getting out of Southern California and moving to Portland, Oregon, to submit to a community. And I use that word submit very intentionally because I think it takes a community to deconstruct well. Because I think you can give in to the impulse to deconstruct poorly, and it takes a community to do that well. And so mine became kind of friends from California, but also geographically rooting in Portland, and seeing the vibrant, healthy churches up there that are being like compressed by secularism, and like the vitality that's created in that secular space, the vitality and passion for the healing presence of God. And, you know, I don't know if you've had John Mark Comer on the podcast, but he's been a dear friend of mine for almost two decades, a decade and a half. And God used him in my life profoundly to just walk with. And then he invited us in as worship, part of the worship community there. And then, hey, we'll plant you as a community, but heal. Like, we want you to like heal here and process here and we'll send you. We see like beauty in God's hand on your life. But yeah, reacting to human failure to create something can be beautiful, but often is laced with more like self-sabotaging systems. I wanted to get to the point where I can, yes, react to human failure to create something more just, but also respond to God's goodness at the forefront to create something that is true. And so that's kind of why we landed back in San Diego. Yeah. My wife really leading the charge. She's like the primary church planter of this thing. And now 5 years going in San Diego, we've had this really beautiful community of largely young, largely single, but also older married folks just pursuing the presence of God in their lives in a historic sense, tied to orthodoxy, but unafraid to answer questions. Every new members class we have is like, I always front it with no question off limits, honest doubt welcome, and bring it. And they can post their questions anonymously onto the screen if it's a tender question. But so that's kind of the community we set out to create. But but we had some pit stops along the way.
Well, it'd be great to sort of tease out the reasons you've ultimately landed in different places and the ways your journeys have taken you, you know, in different directions along the way. I mean, just teasing out a bit more of your story, Michael, you've both obviously been involved in the Christian music worship scene at various points. I mean, was that scene itself, I mean, was there anything about that kind of what is frankly, you know, an industry of its own really in many ways that kind of put you off kind of the Christian thing, the Christian subculture? Was there any of that going on in the background as well as these theological questions that were coming up for you?
Sure. There were moments, especially of, you know, here and there where I think anybody probably in any industry finds human imperfections. And sometimes when things are associated with spirituality, or we tie it to God or Christ or stuff like that, we want it to be, you know, perfect. Mm. We want it to be holy, and then we find out its humanness. So there were certainly moments that I experienced pain and shame and hurt through some of that, but I think there's a perception that I run into sometimes of kind of people's what I'm perceiving as people's assumptions about my journey, that I'm sort of acting out of some sort of hurt, or that I'm running from something, and it's simply not the case. In my perspective and in my experience, I'm sort of living in the fulfillment of my faith, not a running of it. Mm. And of course that happens only moment to moment. It's not like I've arrived and now I just coast. But I feel like I love Evan hearing about how you've created a community that allows space for people to ask questions, allows space for people to be who they are and bring their truth to a community. 'Cause that's, it feels like that's unfortunately rare. I felt that was rare in my life, and I made some very concerted efforts to try to make those communities myself. Lisa and I started a church in Denver under those sort of values as well. This was back in 2008. We were there for several years, and then starting the liturgists was all kind of part of this. I love what Evan said about like deconstructing well with other people. It's important, being held by community. So at this point, like my spirituality is not divorced from or in spite of my Christian upbringing. I do feel like what I learned in church, the practices of surrender, the practices of worship, the practices of service, even just simply like learning how to be quiet sometimes. Like my dad was great at like, we'd come up to him and be like, "We're bored." And he'd be like, "Good."
Yeah.
That was great. He was like, "Go pray in tongues," or whatever you tell us to do. But those practices of just like learning how to be.
Yeah. I miss boredom. Like, how long since you've been bored?
I haven't been bored since I was a child.
I miss it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's not those. Where I'm at now is not a running from pain. It's actually kind of the opposite. I feel like I actually embraced fully the experiences and the teachings of Christ in my perspective.
It's good to hear that.
Yeah.
I guess my one thing I'm aware of, though, and I've had this in conversations where I've had conversations with other people in the Christian music scene who have gone through some kind of deconstruction, had Audrey Assad on last year and the year before that, John Steingard and so on. And I think from both of them, at various points, they talked about the fact that because you are representing or you've come from an evangelical Christian music scene, but you're going on a journey that may be not in the same place as where your fans are or where the kind of crowd is that you've kind of taken with you, it can produce a kind of a difficult kind of disconnect. And it's harder sometimes, I think, maybe to work through that when you are a kind of public persona, if you're a church leader or a worship musician or something like that. And did you feel that? And I guess to what extent, you know, have any of those fans from the early years kind of stayed with you as you've gone through that, you know, quite radical progression in your own faith?
Yeah, thankfully there's still some around that have either actually gone on long journeys and are somehow, there's been some people that we meet and kind of been lockstep the whole time, which is kind of cool when you meet those people. But of course there are people who have dropped off. There have been people who just came recently to the party and like, oh, this is kind of where I'm at. I didn't start where you started, but I'm kind of where you're at now. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for whoever happens to be here on the journey now. But I also have empathy for people who have made different decisions and who look at where I'm at as a threat or as way out there or whatever. Like, I remember, like, I would have been horrified at who I am now as, you know, 20 years ago, I would have saw myself like, no, I've become a heathen bound for hell. And that's, isn't that kind of though, any, if you think of yourself 10, 15 years ago and some of the things that you see the world like now, hopefully there would have been part of you that would be afraid of that if you've grown, right? So I see it. And I know from someone else's perspective, they're of course going to see it differently. But I think we tend to look forward at growth with fear, and we look backwards with disdain, where we came from. That's kind of like the natural tendency. And I did that for a long time, and I don't do it anymore. I actually really value where I came from. I don't like there's labels that are thrown around on the internet like evangelical and stuff like that. I don't define myself like that. I'm not defining myself in opposition to something or like I failed. I tried something and it didn't work. And now I'm something else. Like, we don't do that with school. We're not like, I'm an ex first grader or an ex high school student. It's like, what do you mean? You went through it. You learned what you needed to learn. You keep going, you keep learning, you keep, you experience what you experience and it's part of your journey. And so I'm grateful for where I came from.
Yeah. Evan, do you want to comment either on your journey or Michael's journey as he's described?
Yeah, no, I just have the same value for growth. I remember, I think it was Jordan Peterson. I don't listen to him that often, but when I do, I catch some things he says. You've had him on the podcast, and he said, you know, you've grown up when you realize your dad was wrong about stuff, you know? And I think that's just growing up. That's just growth. And yeah, I think that's a beautiful thing that Jesus invites everyone who follows him to do. And the thing about, I guess Jesus is that he has all these beautiful metaphors for the kingdom. The tearing of wineskins, a seed falling into the ground and dying, all of these things that are ending to begin something. And so Jesus is he's not growth averse, and he invites people toward him. Like it's all an invitation to find fulfillment in a person, in him, as opposed to other persons. And so I just find that, to me, in reference to my own journey, that has been compelling. What is it about Jesus that sets him apart from the other major religious spokespersons, where the non-Christian major religions, they're in large part saying, don't look at me, don't come to me, don't find your fulfillment in me, look to God or look within, or look to the universe or something, where Jesus values all of those things. He values the universe and talks about the inextricably interwoven relationships between humanity and creation, plants and animals, and the immense value of Earth, which wasn't a value in a lot of church circles Michael and I grew up in, the value of Earth. But Jesus upheld the value of Earth. And yet, he brought it all under his authority. Like he saw himself as like the most important person and said, everyone come to me and find healing and fulfillment in me. And grow and realize your dad was wrong. And I guess if there's one thing that I would maybe foresee in a conversation like this with me and Michael, it'd be, I wonder, based on what I've heard you say and write, Michael, I wonder if like there's like several too many either ors for me in some of the framing of Christianity, where for me it's both and. Like, yes, God is mystery. God is indescribable with language. And we have 2,000 years of creedal language, you know? Yes, Jesus is completely conscious of others and conscious of God. And Jesus is totally loving, and Jesus commanded us to love one another. And he believed his Father and the Spirit and himself were persons meant to be in relationship with humanity, all humanity. He wants everyone. And so to me, it's like, at least in you know, the last 10 years in the conversation in which Michael has been a very profoundly significant voice, I wonder sometimes if the depiction of God that a lot of the popular deconstruction voices are speaking of, I wonder if it's the same God me as an Orthodox Christian rejects, you know? So I just think there's a binary there that shouldn't be. Yes, God is not what we thought, and he's more than we think, and Jesus was right, and the church was right, and all of that. So,
that makes sense. I get the sense. Yeah, it makes sense to me, and I wonder at one level as well, Michael, whether you've both had. I think you've both faced similar questions, and you've been, you know, and I get the sense that a lot of the audience for the liturgists have sort of been on the journey for that, for the kind of the questions and questioning a lot of the kind of evangelical subculture, the sort of stuff that maybe has been added on to historic Christianity, and people are asking questions about it, and that there's the deconstruction aspect of that. But then I also wonder whether how many people have kind of followed you into the way you've reconstructed, or whether that's kind of Michael's kind of way of seeing this, because it for me there's obviously a lot of language that sounds, you know, I think it's gone in quite an Eastern kind of Buddhist sort of consciousness kind of direction, where you no longer make a distinction between ourselves and God. I think there's a sense in which a lot of what I hear from you on some of your podcasts and writing is, you know, there was that viral tweet, wasn't there, that mm-hmm. attracted a lot of attention back in 2021. Jesus was Christ, Buddha was Christ, Muhammad was Christ. Christ is a word for the universe seeing itself. You are Christ. We are the body of Christ. I mean, you got a lot of response.
Everyone loved it.
Oh yeah,
universally.
No problems.
And I guess it's that kind of that kind of direction that you've gone in, where it's left even I guess people who kind of aren't, you know, have questions about the kind of evangelical subculture and so on, but they say, but I'm not sure I'm up for Michael's kind of sure. the direction he's gone with seeing it in this framing it in this new way. So so what do you do with that? Where, you know, are you kind of encouraging people to come over here, or I don't know, where do you see yourself in that, Michael?
No, strangely, I actually see myself, my role as encouraging people to embrace their own journey and to actually try to enjoy the process if you can. Like, what's the language that you use? And the hard part about using language from my vantage point, where I'm using words like tools, like full stop, they're tools to communicate something of my experience to someone else. And so I enjoy the game of deconstruction kind of throughout my life. I find a lot of pleasure in it, and I can deconstruct anything I've said and be like, I'll tell you why that's not true. I can tell you why that tweet is incredibly problematic and how it's untrue. I can tell you that, and I'm convicted that that's the case. And I can tell you a way that tweet is absolutely true in my experience, and beautiful and inspiring. And if it's almost like the nature of language. I used to believe that language was sort of equivalent to the truth that I was pointing at. It was almost like I lost the distinction between the finger pointing at the moon and the moon itself. And to me, language is at best the finger pointing to the moon. So when we start confusing language with truth, and to me that's a key distinction. Like, the truth of the matter is unspeakable. It's this moment in its fullness. And so to try to put that in a word is to constrict it into the mind, and then to try to communicate something with some sounds. And so I kind of, maybe in that way, I kind of have a low view of language. But on the other side, I also recognize that it is part of the this moment. So I still also strangely value it really highly. I guess my advice for anybody following me is like, I don't believe what I'm saying. You shouldn't either.
Well, there you go. That's the end. We're done.
My words. I'm using words like I'm using music to invite you into an experience. And the experience that I feel like I'm doing on some level the same thing I've always done as a worship leader, inviting people to surrender, inviting people to, we have this open hand thing that can happen, or this closed fist thing that can happen in life. And I think that's moment to moment, and it's an energy thing. There's the yes and there's the no. And I think it's, you feel these ebbs and flows in your life. And I like finding a way to invite people into yes. Yes of their lives, yes of their journeys. To me, that's the same thing that Christ was teaching. Yeah. And while I do find distinctions helpful, and like you had mentioned, I don't find any distinction between us and God. I wouldn't agree with that. Nor that I don't find any distinctions between the teachings of Jesus or Buddha or Krishna.
Okay. That's helpful.
I find distinctions, but I also find sort of an esoteric, unspeakable core to all of reality that I would call spirit if I'm talking in this language right now. Or Christ.
It's always difficult. Yeah. You're trying to boil really big ideas that you've obviously spent few decades kind of thinking through and coming to into a very small space of words. But we're going to go to a quick break, and I'll be interested to hear Evan's responses and his thoughts on the kind of direction and the nature of the spirituality that Michael currently inhabits, and we'll get to some more of that on the other side of a quick break. You're listening to Unbelievable, Millennials, Music and Deconstruction. Michael Gunga and Evan Wickham. Join me, Justin Briley.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Briley.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about millennials, music and deconstruction. I think Michael and Evan, we're all millennials, or you two certainly are, because you were both born in the 1980s. Am I correct?
That's right.
I'm an old millennial. Right at the edge. Right at the edge.
81? I'm 81.
My wife often teases me that I don't quite qualify as a millennial because I was born on the 24th of December, 1979.
So you are 6 days short. You are so Gen X, it's not even funny.
I know. Tell me about it. She was born in January 1980, a whole decade later. Anyway, why am I talking about millennials? I guess it's because I do see the whole deconstruction thing as I feel like it has become a generational thing, that it is millennials who have kind of been the ones who have borne the brunt of this deconstruction thing, and Gen Z, I suppose, to some extent. But there's a sense in which you guys have kind of gone on the whole journey and ended up in these different places. Evan, what do you say to Michael's, you know, where he's gone? Why? What? And you're not here to kind of try and beat him into submission or anything
Do it. Come on.
No, I'm more curious. I just want to hear him talk and be like, well, what do you mean by?
Well, go ahead. What would you like to find out more about? What are your questions for Michael at this point?
Yeah. So I'm not a, you know, postmodernist linguist guy, but I do think it's interesting what Michael was saying about language being, what was it, Michael? Language is both useful and useless, or however you framed it. But I know from kind of following a little bit of like the liturgist journey, especially the most recent season, just kind of tuning in for the last year or so, you've gone specifically for like dialogues around like historically Christian words. Words like salvation and God and Trinity, like these things that mean things to people. I know you know, what I'm basically a header for what the point I'm making is, yes, words have meanings, but more importantly, like meanings have words. And so, for thousands of years, like the global Christian church has shared language for like these essential terms, like God. You know, for 1800 years, you'd say God and everyone within the Christian world would mean one thing. And then those who were not Christians would know, oh, I don't mean what Christians mean. You know what I mean? However, like this recent change has taken place in the West, the historically agreed upon, like, Christian essentials, they're not the same for people anymore. You know, I think that's kind of what you're driving at, Michael. And so, like, I just kind of want to maybe just ask you what you think of what I'm saying. And you know, listening to you unpack salvation or God, I'm always like, yeah, but what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? You know, so I don't know. How is what I'm saying resonating with you?
Yeah, thank you for sharing it. I'm hearing, I'm hearing a respect and an honor for the tradition that you are part of and the words that, that are an important part of your life and spirituality and community. And I actually like appreciate that and honor your, sort of reverence for that. And because I do know that words are the second half of what I was saying before. I may have said it quickly, but they are powerful. And like the words that we use do create worlds. and do really like influence our experience of reality. So language is important. I do actually sincerely believe that the words that are used by Orthodox mainstream Christianity have drastically been reimagined from what I think Jesus would have meant in speaking about those topics. Like that is sincere. I don't think,
yeah.
I don't see Christ's use of words like God or heaven or the kingdom of God, all those words, I think would mean drastically different things to him than would mean to your average Christian. I also think Christians today, especially, and I also don't necessarily agree with you that a word like God would mean the same thing to all Christians. I think you'd have a hard time finding a couple of people who, if you actually press them on what is God, I'm actually recording a podcast right now where I'm talking about that Augustine quote, "What do I love when I love my God?" And what is it? What are we actually talking about when we're talking about God? And I think that, the image of one person from one moment to the next is probably not even the same thing. One moment somebody might be talking about literally like a cartoon character in their head. That's like a guy in the clouds, but then maybe they feel a little bit more, they really think about it for a second. They're like, that's not actually what I mean by God. I mean, sort of the love that's creating the universe, or, so I don't want to dismiss the importance of language, but I also don't think it's as clean as we would like to make it sometimes.
Yes. This saying it all, but. Yeah, no, that's very good. This gets back to what I was saying earlier with either or versus both and. Like to me, it's both. Yes, God is indescribable, and we all have our own brains, and our brains make a bunch of ninja moves every day to show us what God is like based on our personal experience. And we have 1,800 years of shared language in confessional Christianity across every major denomination. 2.5 billion Christians have said these words. They're called the creed. So like both of those are true. Yes, I have like an anime God in my head that's based on like hurts and great experiences and painful moments with abusive leaders and beautiful moments with a community that actually values my questions. That forms like my personal brain. But like Christianity has always been a we thing until very, very recently. It's like an I individual thing. 1,800 years of doctrine just kind of got interrupted by this thing called theological liberalism, where this guy named Schleiermacher finally smuggled into a pulpit in Germany that Jesus doesn't mean the words that we think he means. That's like a 200-year-old thing, for many reasons. But I guess what I'm pointing at is what the whole church across all of time has had at the core, and it's these things called confessions. And so I would ask, Michael, like when you say when Jesus says God or kingdom or saved, and you say those 1,800 years of global confessions based on like a family tradition, they all got it wrong. Like, what's your grounding for that? Like genuine curiosity, like what's the grounding for that?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for the skepticism and the push and the willingness to
it's like curiosity. It's like good faith.
The good faith. That's what I mean. I appreciate the good faith.
Thank you.
The grounding is honestly experience. It's It's, I used to hear Jesus' words, and I read a lot of Bible. I did a lot of Jesus word memorizing and reading and studying for a lot of my life. And there was always sort of this kind of mysterious or lofty or like, what is exactly that? It all sounded kind of out there. And I was like, I think I get it. I think, what, but what is this? And there was a switch in 2016 where it was almost like, you know, if before you ever were on a Zoom call or something like this, somebody was like describing, so there's a flat, it's like a flat surface on, upon which squares align with our faces, and there are meters going with volume. And if you've never seen or experienced anything like that, it's like, whoa, those are some wild metaphors. And then you actually see the computer and you're like, oh, this is what he was talking about. Just clear as day. It's like, I hear you now. I got it. I had the experience of the kingdom of heaven that he was talking about directly and have it. And so I hear his words and it's just very obvious from my perspective what he's describing. And it's not at all what I used to think it was. And it's almost humorous because he was constantly saying things like, you don't hear, you think you understand what I'm saying and you don't. And I used to be the one who was like, yeah, they don't understand what you're saying. And so I feel the experience, and I of course admit I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just projecting my experience onto his words and I'm totally missed the mark of what he was saying. That's completely possible, but it just seems very obvious to me. That, because I know his words pretty well. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and I'm
in the room that he was describing.
It's helpful. It's helpful to sort of say that. And to some extent, obviously, this 2016 experience was very foundational. It was an epiphany where a lot of things obviously fell into place for you, Michael, and you feel that you kind of got a more holistic, rounded sense of what God is and how you fit in and so on. It, to some extent, you know, would you say that that has led you to something that's more of a kind of universalistic kind of approach to religion, though a pluralistic sense of they're all pointing in that direction? Because obviously where Evan's coming from, I would assume, without wanting to put words in your mouth, Evan, is that while there is value in many religious traditions, it's ultimately in the person of Jesus Christ that you find God fully expressed. Right. And that is the historic, you know, Christian understanding. Whereas it sounds like, Michael, you've seen in Jesus and this kind of flip that happened, a kind of universalizing kind of thing going on where now it all fits into a schema that kind of transcends Christianity or Jesus alone in that sense. Jesus is one more way in which you access that sort of divine source and so on.
That wouldn't be quite accurate, actually. It's more like a shift. What happened was, it was almost like, you know, if you're ever reading a novel or something and you have like this chapter's from the perspective of one character, this is from the perspective of the mom, and then the next one is like this one's from the dad, and then the next one's like, this is just some like kind of all-knowing narrator that's doing this one. It was a lens shift fundamentally. So I used to view religion as something that Michael was trying to understand, that I was trying to get the truth, and that I, if I did the right things, if I believed the right things, if I surrendered enough of my heart, then I would sort of like ascend to this place where I could get the well done, good and faithful servant. I would get to heaven. I would get my rewards. Or eventually that theology changed, and when Christ would reestablish his kingdom on the earth, and I would be part of that. Like, that shifted over and over and over in different theological shades.
Sure.
But what happened and where I'm at now, it's like, it's the protagonist changed. I thought Michael was the protagonist of this story. And what I saw in 2016 wasn't really anything to do with God as much as it was to do with Michael. It was actually seeing what I thought of as Michael, as being the ego constriction, and fear-based, approval-seeking, dad be proud of me, friends think I'm cool, please somebody love me thing that it is.
Yeah.
And my seeking, all my like, I'm going to understand God. I saw how that was related to all that. It wasn't a clean, objective seeking of truth. And what I saw was that what I think of as me is a construct. I saw it directly. I could see the edges of the construct. And so then when I see that it's not a bad thing. Constructs aren't bad. I love my ego. I think it's a beautiful little guy. What I saw is that what I am, the Michael, is rooted and grounded in and being created by what is God, what I would call it, God or spirit, that it's actively being breathed. I used to think of myself as being some sort of like island that could be disconnected from God. Even if I didn't say that, it felt like that. And now that doesn't exist for me. That belief doesn't exist for me anymore. I think that it's all just being breathed by God, if you will. So hearing Christ say, I am the way, the truth, and the life, or I am the bread, or come listen to like all the, what I heard you, Evan, saying that he thought he was the most important person on earth. I don't hear him speaking from the lens of an individual guy. I think in those moments, what I'm hearing is spirit that has fully recognized itself in a human being, is the Father speaking through the Son. It's the unity there. And what I hear Jesus doing is inviting us all into that union. May they be one as you and I are one.
Yeah. If I could, I have two responses. I'd love, one of them is a question. But the first one is, Michael, you and I like have so much in common. It's kind of a little bit scary. So even down to like worship leading in mega churches in evangelical American charismatic / Bible churches. And when you say, back to what you said, you've read a lot of Bible and read a lot of the words. So did I. And I was taught that that's how Christianity is done. Like, if you can get a lot of Bible words in your head and pray every day, you'll be fine.
Sure.
And that's just very new. Like, to me, if I may say, like, it seems that the construct of Christianity you're critiquing is the same one I am. And it's this, like, me and my Bible with all the words and a bearded white male in the sky who wants people to burn. Like, that's so new and so nichely American and not remotely like the 1800 years of confessional Christianity. Like, I'm with you, you know? Like, we've deconstructed the same God. I just think we've reconstructed very differently. I think that's fair to say. So I say that to say, someone can read the Bible on their own and not know what the church has been saying about those words. And that is unfortunate. I've just found so much beauty in like the family, this family that has been so diverse and began as Middle Eastern and quickly was first African with Augustine, and like the African roots of Christianity are profound with Augustine. So the second thing I want to ask was a question, if I may. I read it in your book, so I think I know the answer, but I feel like it's begging this question for the listeners. It's like, what were the circumstances of this 2016 waking up thing? Like you keep referring to it as this moment of grounding. What were those circumstances?
Yeah, well, I want to also be clear. I'll tell you the circumstances, but this will immediately make people, a lot of people go, oh, well, come on. But I want to be clear that when I'm talking about 2016, I'm not like remembering a thing that I'm like, I get, cause there were psilocybin mushrooms were involved in a shamanic, ceremony. And when you
M&Ms,
hear people hear
magic
that,
mushrooms.
Yeah. When people hear that, it's easy to be like, oh, you saw something while you were high on drugs and you think that was true. And that's not actually the case. It's not like I saw some, like I heard something and I'm just holding on to that belief. It was the first time, not the first time, it was kind of the second time, but it was more sustained. The first time was in Assisi. But even before that, actually, I would have moments as a kid, or like in worship sometimes, or like I remember asking myself the question occasionally as a kid, what is, and I would try to get to the third word. I was trying to get, like, we talk about God, and what is the substance of God? What is God? What is reality? I would try to find a word for what I was curious about. Yeah. And my brain would kind of like glitch out. And I was like, I would kind of disappear. Like my whole self would kind of like, it was like, and then almost like I got like hit all this electric fence or something. And I was like, what? And I would try to describe that to people and be like, have you ever like ask yourself what is, and then you kind of like end up in the void or like something. And people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I would have moments where like what I thought I was wasn't clear for a moment. And that what happened in the trip was a really clear perspective change. And so sometimes when you just like see from a perspective that's different, you just notice that you had been seeing from a different perspective. I hadn't even noticed that I was seeing from a perspective in a way. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that I'm like, I took the magic mushroom perspective. I'm like, that's the true one. It just, I had shifted in a moment of having altered, had an altered state of consciousness. But the fact that I saw from a different vantage point allowed me to see almost like step aside and look at I've been looking from there. And that hasn't gone away. I can't unsee that I'm seeing from somewhere. That like I had believed my subjectivity so objectively. I hadn't noticed that it was coming from somewhere, that it was looking from a place that included ego and desire and fear and all that stuff. Right. And so that's what I couldn't unsee. Not that I couldn't see the new vantage point. I unsaw that immediately when I got sober. I'm not seeing from the exact same vantage point, but I can't unsee that I'm seeing from a vantage point. And that was sort of the invitation that I don't get lost anymore in some of those same traps of feeling like I'm objectively seeking the truth.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not bringing that up, even though I know that part of your story, I'm not bringing it up to like discount your perspective, because I know, Justin, you've had other folks on the story who took magic mushrooms and it brought them to Christ. So it's like,
some very interesting journeys out there of people who come in all kinds of different routes.
Yeah. It's like either it's like here nor there kind of thing, you know, interesting.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go to a quick break and we'll have a final part of it. Maybe we'll start with psychedelic experiences after a quick break and see where we go.
Not knowledgeable. I would be a bad conversation partner in that.
Well, we'll maybe at least talk about this new perspective that it brought to Michael. I guess in the end, you know, where you both see this heading, you've both been around the church, the US church, for a long time. And I'm kind of interested in the fact that you've both gone in different directions, but what that means, you know, where you think that other millennials around you are heading at the same time, and whether what Michael's describing is the kind of direction that actually people are pushing in, or whether they're coming back towards something more like a historic Christian tradition. But we'll get to all that after a quick break. You're listening to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley. My guests today, Michael Gunga and Evan Wickham.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back. We'll have the final part of our conversation between Michael Gunga and Evan Wickham in just a moment's time. From feedback coming up as well to last week's show on rethinking kingdom work in the global South and North, that was with Andrew Scott and Joseph D'Souza.
And by the way, Bishop Joseph D'Souza is Sam Hale's guest tonight on The Profile at 8 p.m. on Premier Christian Radio, or on The Profile podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. You'll get an in-depth look at his life and ministry, reaching out especially to the outcasts, the untouchables in India. So look out for that on The Profile podcast. Two Andys join me on next week's Unbelievable show. Is God Hidden in Plain Sight? That's the contention of stand-up comedian Andy Kind in his new book. He'll be coming on with fellow stand-up comedian Andy White, who's an atheist, to talk comedy, atheism, and the search for God. So look out for that at the same time next week. And just a quick reminder as well, you can join us on Tuesday, the 15th of November, for a live recording of the show with Sean McDowell. We'll be discussing LGBT, trans, abortion, morality, the Bible, you know, the small stuff, how we speak with truth and grace into polarizing issues. Ask your questions. It's an audience Q&A show. You can register to be part of that at unbelievable.live. Completely free to join us for that. Just register again at unbelievable.live. The link is with today's show. By the way, if you enjoy Unbelievable, you might like our other podcasts. Ask NT Wright Anything is my regular sit-down with New Testament scholar Tom Wright. The latest show, How Do I Talk to Muslims About Christ and Is Jesus the Only Way? Matters of Life and Death with Tim and John Wyatt. They're looking at AI sentience, I-Thou relationships, talking to stuffed animals, thanking Alexa, and all those kinds of things to do with. On the C.S. Lewis podcast, the most recent edition of that is looking at the spirituality of some of the Inklings, Owen Barfield, C.S. Lewis, and J.R.R. Tolkien. That's a great conversation I had with Mark Vernon and Malcolm Guite on that. And on Unapologetic, Ruth Jackson takes the reins now over at Unapologetic, speaking to young black apologist Claire Williams on why black history matters. So if you want to check out any of those podcasts, do subscribe on your podcast provider or check out premierunbelievable.com for more on all of them. Right now, let's get into the final part of today's discussion. Talking about millennials, music, deconstruction, Michael Gunga is a well-known artist, started out really as a pioneer in the Christian music scene with his wife Lisa, and really took a journey which has been followed by many people who listen to his podcast, including the liturgists, of deconstruction, putting things together a different way. Some magic mushrooms were involved along the way as well. Evan Wickham, pastor of Park Hill Church in San Diego, is joining the conversation today. Connected with Michael some time back when they were both working in Christian music and worship leading, but have gone in different directions as we've been exploring today, as Evan continues to pastor in a kind of more the historic Orthodox Christian stream, and continues to help other people with similar questions and doubts and, you know, deconstruction going on as well. Before we go any further, I should say gungamusic.com if you want more from Michael. evanwickham.com for more from Evan, and you can find both of those with today's show. I mean, Evan, I suppose hearing Michael's journey and Michael's story is unique, you know, that doesn't necessarily represent the direction that everyone's going in necessarily. But when you are working alongside and pastoring people who maybe are having similar kind of journeys where they're questioning the old kind of ways in which they were told to understand God and the Bible and so on. And we do see this apparent sort of trend for deconstruction, ex-evangelicals, whatever label you want to put on it. Do you see things kind of going in the direction that Michael is describing of this kind of more, I don't know, this spirituality that is obviously redefining to some extent, you know, the Orthodox Christian sort of traditions that have been associated with God and Jesus and the kingdom of God and so on? Or do you think the energy is in the direction that you've been pushing, which is to certainly ask those questions, but to maybe, yeah, try and come back to something that is more like a historic Orthodox faith?
Yeah. That's something I talk about a lot with people. You know, I'm part of a leadership kind of collective, and we meet with pastors all over the Western world, really, in largely from secular cities, and we're just asking the question, like, what does it look like to lead people well in the way of Jesus, the historic way of Jesus, I would even say, in an age in the West specifically where the numbers are currently declining. Absolutely, like when you look at the number of folks that are pastors right now after 2020, 2021, something like 1,700 pastors a month are just, it's quitting time, you know, they're done. And that's not to say anything of church members. So yeah, there's this ebbing happening in the West. But I love Rebecca McLaughlin, Timothy Tennant, these folks that do like the firsthand sociology work. They work with the sources, like what's happening globally. I'll just put it this way. For every one Western elite educated, largely millennial person that is leaving the church in the West, there's like five brown, female, non-English speaking, never read your blog, probably will never listen to Unbelievable, but are passionate about the way of Jesus, flooding to Jesus today, like coming to Jesus today. It's exploding all over the majority world, the way of Jesus, and largely a conservative one that holds to like orthodoxy and orthopraxy and the doctrine and ethics of Christianity. And it's thrilling to be, you know, to know that as a white male straight pastor in the West, I am this shrinking minority, and Jesus is thriving in the church is thriving with Christ all over the world. It's a beautiful thing. So all that to say, I think when we focus on kind of our Western bubble, we can miss the big picture of what God is up to. I highly recommend Timothy Tennant's Theology in Context of Global Christianity. He does all the work there. Granted, it's a bit older. Rebecca McLaughlin does some of the newer work. Mm-hmm. Just the church is on the move. Jesus like was right. Like I know Michael's quoting Jesus. I love what Jesus has to say about his assembly. The word church is assembly. And Jesus said the church is built on this confession that Jesus is the Messiah. He's the King. He has authority over our bodies and over our families. And he is the Son of the living God. You have both practice and doctrine there. Jesus doesn't separate them. And then he says, on this rock, Peter, you just made that confession. On this rock, I will build my church, and not even the gates of hell will stand against it. So like, if Jesus has anything to say about it, there's nothing stopping. The church is actually invincible in like the most humble, beautiful, weak over the strong kind of way. Even if it means me as a privileged white male diminishing in the grander context of what God is doing, so be it. Like I'm thrilled. So
yeah. So my question to you, Michael, is a similar one to Evan, whereas he sees the US instantiation of the church is maybe something that does have to change and adapt. Nonetheless, God's purposes will happen in the global sense. But do you think that actually in the West, people are going to be going more in your direction, the way that you've now thought again about God and the church, that actually that's the direction of travel of people of your generation? Does that make sense?
Okay, so I think, first of all, I don't really have an opinion about what people should be believing, what words are going to be useful for them, what technologies. I think if I have any issue with the global church, as Evan is sort of framing it, the colonialism that tends to happen, that's happened through a lot of the history of the church, of having it, especially when it got sort of in bed with empire, and the political ideologies of Rome kind of got interwound with Christianity. That violence that happens from the Crusades to slave trades to holy wars to just straight up just shaming people who are different. I think it's possible to love Christ and to not do that part. So if there's anything that I hope to see more of in Christendom is sort of let me just put it in Christian terms. I hope that Christianity can begin to trust that God is the author of salvation and not them. That God is the one, the author and the finisher of faith. And because I know from my own journey, there were times, and people would disagree from the outside with this, but I know there were times that I, the story I tell at the beginning of the book, Evan, about me being in the spa and like letting go of my beliefs of God. Mm-hmm. There was something in the inner experience of that that was so holy, that was so, it was in a way the most faithful thing that I had ever done to God, was letting go of my mind's grasp of God. And that's hard to explain to somebody else. And from somebody else coming from a different place, that wouldn't be the case. But I think we're so fast to judge each other on what God wants for this person, what salvation looks like for that person, even including if I could be, I'm not hurt by even the question of hurt coming up in this conversation. But I think if I could really quick, I heard there was a couple, that I was talking to recently, and she had been hurt by, he had been really giving his attention to some other people. And she felt she was hurt by that, but she was kind of framing it as he's so codependent that he can't, say no to them. So he's got all this hurt and all this stuff going on with them. And he wants to be with me. It was the kind of feeling like he doesn't want to be off spending his energy there. But the truth was, I asked him, I was like, is that the truth, or do you want to be doing those things? And he's like, no, I do want to be doing them. So, but there was like this kind of protection that she got by saying, by just believing that he was sort of the victim of some hurt, some codependence, that he had his hands tied. He really he would rather be with her, but the codependence, right? And so there can be that feeling of like someone who has arrived in a different place, or not even arrived, just is in a different place than you, to try to blame it on something. Right? Be like, oh, he must be hurt. There must be some sort of pain that he's running from. Maybe he's just come to different conclusions than you. Maybe he's found something more beautiful than the thing he sees you offering. You know, having a little humility as an institution, as an individual, and I'm not saying you don't have humility, Evan. I've loved talking to you and feeling again like that good faith that you actually are willing to have a real conversation, which takes humility. It takes humility to have a real conversation. But I guess my hope and invitation to not just Christians, but anybody who is, can we learn to really value what we value? Learn to, you don't have to just become laissez-faire about like, I don't care what any words mean. I don't care. Throw out all the creeds. I'm not saying to do that. But can we have enough humility to know that I'm seeing from a place, I'm experiencing from a place, and maybe salvation for that person doesn't look exactly the same as it looks for me right now. And sort of having that human to human humility. I think if we learned to value that more, I do think people's deconstruction could be gentler for a lot of us. I think there would be less shame, less violence that happens between people that disagree. And then we can honor, like I can truly honor how you see the Bible, Evan, and how you see Christianity and the words that I define differently, and see like, wow, if this is working for you, if this is bringing you into love, peace, joy, the fruits of the Spirit, kindness, goodness, like beautiful, great. I'm so happy that that's helping you. I've also learned that one person's medicine is another person's poison. And somebody with the same exact, some of those creeds, while helpful for one person, are absolutely soul destroying for another. So just having kind of the humility of with each other. And this is for myself and everyone as well. But in that, to answer the back half of your question, Justin, necessarily think everybody's, I don't see my viewpoint as like a trend or like something that I'm even trying to get people to see things like I am necessarily. But I do hope that we can be a little bit more gracious with each other in whatever the journeys look like, and honor that salvation is the Lord's and not mine.
Any final thoughts from you, Evan, as we close out what has been a very gracious conversation?
I thank you, Michael, for just your honor and kindness. And seriously, you know, that this is the first face-to-face, albeit digital, that we've had in 10 years. It's a good one. And I hope to have many more. You're like, I was driving through LA recently and like texted you. I'm like, hey, let's meet. I didn't even know we were going to do this a month later, but we didn't get to meet then. But like, first of all, Wendell Berry's line comes to mind. The way to prevent disagreement from becoming destructive is to seek clarity rather than victory. You know, clarity is what we owe in honesty and goodwill to one another, and victory can only divide us again into a party of winners and a party of losers, preparing us for further confrontation. And I think that was my goal, and it sounds like it was Michael's, like clarity, you know, the line, famous Brené Brown, clear is kind, unclear is unkind, which is why I asked about the words you use, Michael, because, without definitions, words are very unclear. And I know you know that. And Christian doctrinal words without shared definitions become anybody's ballgame, which is why I brought it up. But I mean, the only other thing I would say, like, yes and amen, like may Christian go anti-colonial, you know, may Christian repent and even seek like a harmony. I think of America and the history of racism here. May the church learn, specifically the white church, learn how to raise the conversation of reparations so that the black communities in our churches and the black church doesn't have to keep raising it. You know what I mean? And may forgiveness also happen. Like, what does reparations and Christ-shaped forgiveness 70 times 7 look like? Like, I don't even know what that looks like. I think of the picture at the end of the Bible where the lamb is in the middle of the universe and John is crying because he's like, who is worthy to open the scroll? Nobody can fix the problems of the universe. Like, I'm right there with you 100%, Michael. Like, may the lamb, the slaughtered lamb, begin to actually be the healing presence of Jesus everywhere. And that requires the church to be postured to die, like not to dominate, but to die. So I'm like 100% there. And you know what you said at the end about humility, that was why I brought up clarity. I just feel like this was clarifying and I'm grateful for it. Thanks, Michael and Justin.
Well, thank you both for being with me. It's been great to have you on, and all the very best as you continue on your journeys. Perhaps we'll get you together in another 10 years and find out where you both are at that point. But for now, Evan and Michael, thanks for being with me.
Thanks, Justin.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. It's so good to be here.
So tell me what you thought of today's show. You can email unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also leave us your thoughts on our social media at unbelievablefe for our Twitter account, facebook.com/premierunbelievable for the Facebook account. Be interested to know what you made of this. By the way, we'll be having some of your feedback to recent editions of the show. Just before we come back to that, it's got some interesting events coming up. Just want to highlight for you again, coming up on the 2nd of November, an evening with James K.A. Smith at the Swiss Church in Covent Garden. This is put on by the Everything Conference. James K.A. Smith is a really interesting Christian thinker at the time. He'll be sharing thoughts from his new book, How to Inhabit Time, Understanding the Past, Facing the Future, Living Faithfully Now. If you want more on that, everythingconference.org. Also coming up soon is a special conference happening in Leeds on C.S. Lewis, and that is with Trevin Wax, who's going to be a guest on with Ruth Jackson on the C.S. Lewis podcast this coming week. But that's going to be happening at the Bridge Conference Centre on Saturday, the 5th of November. So if you want to be part of that, that's from 10 till 4:30
in the afternoon. C.S. Lewis, a visionary for our time. You can find out more by going to thinkfaith.net. And the London Unbelievable Skeptic Discussion Group relaunches on the 7th of November. That's Monday the 7th of November. Kicking off with a talk on Does God Have a Body? Or rather, did the Hebrews think so? And that's a great chance for anyone in the London area to talk and discuss at the pub they meet at, which is the Cock Tavern. That's between King's Cross and Euston Station. Meetup.com, and you're looking for the Unbelievable Christian and Skeptic Discussion Group in London to find out more about that. So just a few things coming up that might be interesting in your calendar if you're in the UK area. But let's go to some of your feedback to recent editions of the show. Phil Batterson actually wanted to get this in, you know, in advance of us putting out this discussion between Evan Wickham and Michael Gunger. Says, I want to send you something before that podcast drops. I don't want to dislike anyone, but Michael Gunger went from being a Christian to clowning on Christians and Christianity. I have all the love in my heart necessary to forgive him, but his apostasy is just that. He felt pressure to not be a Christian, denied Christ, presented Christians as simpletons and imbeciles, and I think the rubber is meeting the road for him. He's going to try and present himself as though he wasn't hostile towards Christ, Christianity, or Christians. I'll likely follow up this email after the podcast, but I felt it necessary to say something beforehand because I was one of the people that was inspired by his music. To have Christians come in and go out as though Jesus is a fad that's popular with the kids or popular for a time or fills a need in the moment completely misunderstands who Christ is and what Christianity is. And so it is my ardent belief that people who practice such Christianity may receive forgiveness from God through Christ. They may be welcomed at my table as a fellow sinner, but they can never again be allowed to hold any position of authority in the church. Never, ever, says Phil. It is with a sober heart that I'm even writing this because I do truly hope that Michael and his wife, that they find restoration in Christ. Thank you, Phil. Obviously, I'd be interested to hear what other people make now that that discussion has gone out. Jeff in Lexington in Kentucky wants to get in touch about a classic replay with Richard Carrier. This was one where I sat down with Mark Goodacre and Richard Carrier. This happened a few years ago, but it was an interesting discussion on whether Jesus existed. That's obviously the contention that he didn't from Richard Carrier, who's a Jesus mythicist, and saying it reminded me of the story of the bawdy comedic actor and unbeliever W.C. Fields. Once he was caught by someone reading the Bible. When asked why he was doing that, Fields replied, I'm looking for loopholes. Carrier seemed to be requiring historical evidence for Jesus to be absolutely certain knowledge, perhaps forgetting that only mathematics and deductive logic yield absolute certainty in this world. All our real-world knowledge, including history, is based on reasonability, not absolute certainty. Carrier kept referring to dying and rising figures from other traditions as if their non-historicity transferred to Jesus. But I like how C.S. Lewis characterized those figures as products of our human imaginative memory, of which Jesus of Nazareth is the fulfillment. Glad you enjoyed listening back to that show, Jeff. You can get a regular dose of our classic replay, by the way, in case you're not aware, every Tuesday that comes out, we bring you a show from the archives that we think is worth re-airing. Let's go to some more of your feedback, though, that's come in. This one from Josh, who is a missionary, wants to respond to last week's show looking at Kingdom Mission in the global North and South. Joseph D'Souza and Andrew Scott were my guests for that. Says, thanks so much for the work on Unbelievable. I listen to almost every episode, always learn something new, and really enjoy the different formats and vast variety of topics you cover. Found it helpful in sharpening my theological and apologetic edge. So thanks to you and the team. I am a Western missionary working in the Global South and have just listened to that podcast with Joseph D'Souza and Andrew Scott. Found it enormously interesting and have just started reading Andrew's book Scatter as a result. Looking forward to being challenged further. However, I just wanted to get in touch to say that I would have loved to hear a little more critical pushback on some of the ideas being put forward. Although Andrew was a great interlocutor, it would have also been interesting to hear from someone with a different perspective to Joseph's. Joseph rejects old paradigms of missionary work in favour of a new, apparently more holistic paradigm, which he says involves transforming whole communities through education, health, community work, etc., and letting the world see the difference Christ makes to the real world here and now, as opposed to a pie in the sky when you die gospel. Yes and amen, I say, except I don't recognise at all the straw man he built of the old paradigm of mission. Since time immemorial, missionaries worldwide have established schools, built hospitals, transformed education systems, founded and run orphanages, lobbied governments, challenged class and caste systems, introduced improved technology, etc. In other words, the old paradigm of mission did indeed transform whole communities. I grew up as a missionary kid in the Indian subcontinent in the 80s and 90s. There was no written form of the local language where we lived, so the system of writing was developed by Christian missionaries for the purpose of community literacy and Bible translation. Their work transformed the community for Christians and non-Christians alike. The modern literacy rates in many nations worldwide have been significantly contributed to by the foundational work of missionaries. Many other examples could be given of holistic mission work done by previous generations, micro-edit schemes, business as mission, medical work, etc. I simply don't recognise the caricature Joseph built of the missionary who comes sweeping in, railing against local faiths such as Hinduism and Islam, and building walls of hostility between communities. Maybe I move in different circles, but I've never seen what he describes. There will always be individuals who engage in bad practice, even in the missionary community, but that doesn't mean that the entire missionary paradigm of previous generations should be tarred with the same brush. Joseph's two main examples of kingdom fruit in the Good Shepherd communities were the establishment of schools and a story about a mobile app developer, but they're precisely the kind of community transformation projects and innovations that many missionaries have been engaged in for generations. I'm simply unconvinced that this is anything new. Anyway, you want to say you'd love to see a little bit more critical pushback on this idea of a new paradigm. Thank you very much. Josh, good to hear you and that you're benefiting from the program, and thanks for that. For that engagement, we will be addressing this again, the issue of missionary work. Were they good for the continents that they went to, especially those Victorian missionaries? Got an interesting show coming up on that in a few weeks' time. Maybe just one more. Let's go to looking again at Old Testament warfare. Paul Copan and Randall Rouser join me for this one. Wes wanted to say, greetings to you. Stumbled upon your podcast about a year ago. Now I don't miss an episode. Really appreciate it. The recent show on the Israelite conquest of Canaan reminded me of a fantastic recent episode from the Bible Project podcast. They embarked on a thematic study of the Torah. I have been enthralled this year as they highlight the beauty of this unified text when we attempt to read it as an ancient Israelite would have. One of the main melodies from the initial portions of Genesis is that God is the author of life and that separation from him and disregard for his ways inevitably leads to death. When humans brazenly abuse the weak and marginalized, murder and malign his image bearers, he sometimes accelerates the decreation process that has already been set in motion, i.e. Genesis flood, as a prime example. Death was already coming, and God in his mercy chose to end the carnage to save some from an even more horrible end. They summarize the Canaanite campaign in similar terms, at least when reading through the eyes of the ancient Old Testament authors. This is presented as a human flood of divine judgment on the snake-like giant inhabitants of the land. God is bringing justice to those willingly following in the line of the Cain, Lamech, Nimrod, and Ham, and the Nephilim. Confusing, yes. Can it explain away all objections from our contemporary culture? Probably not. However, I do think this kind of engagement with the text is critical and sorely lacking in most Christian communities today, especially within the strand of evangelical Protestantism where I find myself. I'd love to see a show with Tim Mackey from the Bible Project, my two favourite podcasts coming together. What a thought. Thanks again and blessings on all you do. Thanks, Wes, out in Dayton, Ohio, and to others who have been getting in touch as well about that show. Yeah, it's probably well over time that we had Tim Mackey on the show. I know that a lot of what we do intersects with what the Bible Project do. So thanks for the suggestions and thank you for being in touch. Everyone who's got in touch about recent shows, you can email in as ever, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Don't forget to check out unbelievable.live for our next upcoming live webinar event with Sean McDowell, Tuesday the 15th of November. That's happening. You can register now at unbelievable.live. For now, thanks for being with us and we'll see you next time. Two Andys join me next time. Is God hidden in plain sight? That's the contention of stand-up comedian Andy Kind in his new book. He'll be coming on with fellow stand-up comedian and atheist Andy White to talk comedy, atheism, and the search for God. Do join us next time. For now, thanks for being with us.